I'm riding Sublime all the way down, baby.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Laravel podcast. I'm your host, Matt Stauffer. We're back after break. It's January 4th is the day we're recording, so we are all just kind of back in our offices, our respective offices, after New Year's and Christmas and all this kind of stuff, and just kind of getting settled again. We've got some stuff to catch up on, but first, let's do introductions. Guys, can you introduce yourselves?
I am Jeffrey Way.
And I'm Taylor Otwell.
All right, so we've got a kind of a mixed match of things, of just stuff that's popped up over the last couple of weeks. Laravel 5.2 dropped a couple of weeks ago. I don't think we had actually announced it yet. And I don't think there's actually anything on our plate to talk about that. But we just want to say, you know, Laravel 5.2 is out. If you haven't got a chance to check it out, do so. Both Jeffrey and I have been covering some topics on our respective content platforms, and I'll be keeping blogging on it, and I'm guessing he'll make some more videos about it. But the thing that has been biggest on at least Taylor's and my plates lately has been the great Linode DDoS, distributed denial of service attacks that have been going on. So the rudiments of that are basically someone has decided that they really don't like Linode. And we have a secret conspiracy theory that it's actually DigitalOcean. Not really. That's totally a joke. But someone has decided they hate Linode. And so they basically have been doing crazy denial of service for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it got so bad, what was it, like Thursday or Friday or something like that, that basically everybody's sites were down. So Jeffrey, were you hit at all?
No, luckily I was on DigitalOcean. But yeah, this is one of those things. It very easily could have been DigitalOcean that's hit.
Yeah.
It's pretty rough, man. I felt so bad for some of you guys, especially like the subscription sites that make money, to go basically a full day of downtime. I mean, that's potentially thousands of dollars of lost money. That's insane. And then they would come up for like 30 minutes and then go right back down.
Yeah.
So yeah, pretty rough for them. I'm sure that this is a nightmare, especially like through New Year's Eve. I don't know if this was going on around Christmas, but I think it was.
It was going on during Christmas. It wasn't as bad, but it's been going on and off for 2 weeks. It's been really bad over the last probably 3-4 days.
That's so rough. I feel really bad for them, honestly.
Someone has it out for Linode.
Yeah, I feel bad, and I'm really hoping that we do like see them figure out what's happening and be restored. And I got to be honest, I moved away from Linode I was going to move from Linode to DigitalOcean. We use DigitalOcean for most of our sites. But it was kind of the whole thing of the main server we have on Linode is our, you know, the primary software as a service that we run, Karani. And I've already moved it 3 or 4 times over the last couple of years, and I just don't like that. And I was just like ready to commit to paying a little more money, maybe even paying somebody to do a little bit of DevOps for us, and just not dealing with moving the server all the time. So I actually finally committed and threw mine over to AWS. We'll talk that a little bit later. Taylor, you moved to DigitalOcean, right?
Yes, I am on the ocean, surfing the waves.
So what was that experience like? Did you run into anything you want to talk about, or was the migration pretty smooth?
So, okay, a couple of lessons I learned during this move. So Linode was down for a few days, actually probably about a day and a half before I started to move. And this was over like New Year's Eve into New Year's Day. And I think it was actually like the second, January 2nd, that I decided to move. But the first problem was like my database backups, or really my server backups, were in Linode, and they were in the Atlanta region. So like, those nightly backups were useless because I can only really restore those back into the Atlanta region. And they're basically bit for bit copies of the server, like the entire hard disk. They're not just database copies. So that was the first problem. So I had to wait for Linode to come back up for like this 15-minute window one morning. And I was able to actually get into the box, dump out the database backups with MySQL dump, and, you know, FTP them off the server or whatever. So that basically was what I needed. I did forget to export my SSL certificate stuff, so I had to reissue my SSL certificates. But other than that, really, it wasn't that bad. Once I got the databases, I think I was fully migrated within a couple hours for both Forge and Envoy. So, you know, overall wasn't too bad, but main lesson learned is have your database backups on a different provider than your server host, which is being DDoS'd.
Right. So what did you do specifically? Are you using a service?
Yeah, now I'm using Automatic, OttoMatik. I guess it's right. That's built by Brian Webb, who you might have seen at Laracon if you were there. But basically, it can do hourly backups, and it streams them to S3, so it takes up no space on my server, and it doesn't bring down the entire site or lock up the entire table as it's doing it. So that's pretty nice. And then he told me he's planning to add a restore, and kind of so you can restore any backup to a certain server. So that will be nice as well. So that's kind of peace of mind. I don't have to think about it, and it's keep retaining, you know, the last 10 backups or so every hour. So yeah, then it's basically just a simple MySQL dump, so I can restore it to any platform, and it's not really tied to DigitalOcean or to Linode or anything like that.
Yeah, that's nice.
I love Automatik. I'll put a link in the show notes for it, but I've been using it for a couple months, and I've had all sorts of backup and restore issues, and now I'm just confident all the time that I've got... So what I do for our software as a service is I have rolling backups daily and hourly, and you can choose for each of your backups how long it's going to last and all that kind of stuff. So I keep daily for the last month and hourly for the last 24 hours backups for my main software as a service. So I've got kind of access to it. And of course, I'm paying for the storage on S3, but I don't really care that much. And it's really, really helpful to have that. I mean, it's just so, so valuable. And he's built a lot of really cool tools about like the streaming. There's one thing that Taylor mentioned. So instead of, if you pay for, I think you have to pay the upgraded plan, but instead of storing the dump on your local server and then SCPing it over, it actually streams it directly. So you don't run out of storage space or anything like that. I took advantage of that for my backups. The thing that I had to run into is that my when I moved over, I needed my encryption keys and my environment files. So I had to wait for Linode to come back up for one of those 30 minutes. It was actually a 14-minute stint up, and I had pinged him telling me when my site came up. And the moment I got a text message, I just told my wife, I'm like, just so you know, there's a text message. And when it comes in, I'm going to drop everything and run over to the computer. And I SSH'd in, and I basically grabbed my environment files and then my, my SSL key. No, actually, I didn't need the SSL key in the end because I just reissued it. No, I did, because DN Simple takes several days to reissue a SSL cert. You guys were on Namecheap, right? And you said reissuing the cert took like 5 minutes. DN Simple, they've got some manual aspect of their reissuing process. So I asked for a reissue on Saturday and I still haven't gotten it yet.
Oh,
so that's 2 days later. So
one thing I've also done today, since Linode's DNS servers were being DDoS'd as well, as I'm going to switch on Amazon Route 53 today for all the Laravel and Envoyer DNS stuff. So hopefully cross my fingers and that doesn't go haywire and all the sites go back down again.
Trying to think if there's any pieces of my reissuing process or anything else. Oh, you know what? Getting my server up and running, the new server on AWS, took me a little bit of work because the environments are just a tiny bit different. I was expecting then to move over to Envoyer and have to kind of like do a manual process of getting everything up and running again. But with Envoyer, all I did was I just added a new server to my Envoyer project for Karani and then deleted the old server, and then I was done. It was amazing. Like, it was just ridiculously simple if you have a properly configured... And if I had had my environment file in Envoyer, I wouldn't have even had to worry about getting it out of Linode. But we hadn't done it that way. But yeah, that was beautiful. So if you're not using Envoyer, there's a lot of great things about Envoyer. The whole kind of zero downtime deployment, all that kind of stuff is really great if you've got something where you're not willing to let it go down every time you kind of compose or install and everything. But... man, adding multiple servers, switching servers, all that kind of stuff it took me under 5 minutes to basically migrate my entire site over. And the only thing I had to move was the data. And so between Envoyer and Automatik, it was basically painless. So that was something. There's a pitch for Envoyer. So
yeah, well, another thing that really saved my butt was I already had another copy of Forge running on a DigitalOcean server that I used just for like testing and stuff for new features. So I actually had a copy of Forge that I could use to provision new Forge servers from scratch. Nice. Otherwise, that would have been a total pain.
So one of the things that I ran into when I moved was I was moving a much older server, and this app still actually runs on CodeIgniter. It's a CodeIgniter base that has been probably 60%+ replaced by Laravel components. We'll eventually move the whole app over to Laravel. And one of the things we ran into when we moved over to this newer version of to a brand new server was that it was on MySQL 5.7. And we kind of have been running some issues, and some of them have to do with strict mode and some of them don't. We still haven't sussed them all out. But I wanted to chat real quick. I know that some people have been running into issues with 5.7. I haven't done the looking into it. There's three times I ran into it. One of them was I was installing a Craft CMS site on a new Forge install. Another one was I was taking a really old Laravel site and like 4.2 or 4.1 or something like that, and I was putting it and I ran into some date time issue with defaults in 0000. And then the other one was this CodeIgniter one. So I'm guessing the latest Laravel installs won't run into this, but could either of you guys talk about what is the situation with MySQL 5.7 strict mode problems people need to be concerned about? Do you know much about that?
I'd love to know myself because I'm hoping to upgrade the Laracast database to 5.7, but man, that stuff scares the crap out of me.
So yeah, the main issue is the date stuff. The Laravel configuration file for database has a strict mode option that you can just set to false that will basically make everything should pretty much work. The main difference is in MySQL 5.7, strict mode is on by default. And in the past, with like Laravel 5.1 and previous versions, we set the default dates to all zeros, which is considered invalid in MySQL 5.7 if strict mode is on. So if you try to insert a row and don't provide a valid date, like it's gonna barf an error out. Or if you try to run a migration even that sets a default value to an invalid date, it's going to throw an error. So, I mean, some people turn strict mode off, you know, going forward just because it's easier because you already have sort of your database structure in place with those kinds of dates. But with Laravel 5.2, we actually changed it to where the default it just forces you to insert a valid date to begin with, or you can set the default to the current timestamp, which would also be valid. So we have some helpers in place with Laravel 5.2, and there's actually a note about this in the upgrade guide for 5.2 if you want to read a little bit more about it. But that's really the gist of it, is the date stuff is what bites people the most.
I'm going to link the upgrade guide in the show notes. I think, so if someone was taking a 4.2 site or just a pre-5.2 site, the two options for making it work on 5.7 are one, and does that strict mode flag in the database settings, does that work in older versions of Laravel 2?
Yeah, I backported that all the way back to Laravel 4.2. Nice. So way back.
So if you're taking a 4.2 or later Laravel site, it's not 5.2, you're putting it on 5.7, you got two options. One of them is to add a new key in the database config that's called strict and just set it to be false. And that'll be one way to do it. And your other option is to find, is it basically to find any places where you've got a date, date time, and basically date or date time, and set it to have a default instead of just allowing it to be nulled out.
Yeah, I think what you would need to do is in your database client, log into your database and turn strict mode off briefly, and then update your default values on your timestamp columns to be something valid. And then you can turn strict mode back on. Or, I mean, it won't matter. I mean, turn it off for that client session is what I mean, but you can leave it on once you get your default value set to something valid.
And I'm looking here. It looks like, in your migration file, you could call like table arrow timestamp. And then I don't know if this is new, but there's a method called use current. And that would just default to the current. Okay, so that is
That's cool.
Very useful.
And if you don't call that, it's just going to be, it's going to be like any other non-nullable column. If you don't insert a valid value, it's going to throw an error. I don't know why. I don't even remember why it used to insert zeros if you didn't provide a value. That's really strange. But anyway, that's not the case anymore.
Is this use current backported as well?
I think it's in 5.1. I know it's definitely in 5.1. I don't know if it's in 5.0.
So another new thing in 5.7 is the JSON column type. Does Laravel have any support for that?
Yeah,
should that just work out of the box?
Table arrow JSON in your migration will make a real JSON column in Laravel 5.2. In Laravel 5.1, it would just fall back to making a text column because it assumed that you were on like MySQL 5.5 or 5.6. But yeah, in Laravel 5.2, it will make a real honest to goodness JSON column. And if you were using JSON previously and you don't want it to be a real JSON column, you want it to be just a text column, then you can just change it to table arrow text. That's also noted in the upgrade guide as well.
Is there a difference in how your Eloquent models will handle JSON fields between using an actual JSON field versus using the JSON casts?
I'm not really sure. I haven't played with the JSON stuff in MySQL yet, really. So okay. I'm not really sure how that will behave. Either.
Cool, but worth playing around with and seeing how it works.
Yeah, now that both Postgres and MySQL support JSON, it might be worth also having some kind of basic query helpers to actually work with JSON columns. Otherwise, you're basically left to writing raw where statements anytime you have a JSON column.
One note real quick about the disabling strict mode. If you're using Forge for non-Laravel things, which I do often, I'd use it for Craft, CMS, and other stuff, you're probably going to run into some of these strict mode things. It's a known thing that Craft CMS just doesn't work on strict my 5.7 to strict mode. there's a way to disable it basically by certain settings in your MySQL configuration file. Rather than trying to talk that out right now, I'll just write a quick blog post and link it in the show notes. Hopefully I'll have it done by the time we release this. So, all right. So, moving on. So AWS, the only reason I have this here is because I feel like we're kind of at least, Taylor and I, and Jeffrey, I don't know what your interest level is here, starting to kind of delve into the world of AWS a little bit. I've had good enough knowledge. I mean, I wrote a blog post about how to set up a custom VPS on Forge with AWS before Taylor brought back the actual kind of, you know, UI for it. And I've just moved kind of my primary SaaS that I maintain onto that. So I'll kind of be digging this to world. Do either of you use AWS, whether it's S3 or, you know, EC2 or Qs or SES or anything else like that? Do you guys use that for anything on a daily basis?
I use S3, of course, but beyond that, I would love to use more. It's just so confusing. You know, a lot of people are like, why are you using these standalone services like Pusher when you can basically just use Amazon for everything? And to me, that sounds great. I would love to. It just always seems completely unintuitive, especially compared to some of the standalone options you can use. So if there was somebody who would just simplify all of this for everyone, it would be huge, but I just haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I use SQS for queues, S3 for the database backups, and then after today, hopefully Route 53 for the DNS. I mean, the SQS and S3 is not that bad to configure, but in themselves, but then you have to deal with like the whole IAM thing where you have to configure your users to have the right permissions, and the IAM thing is pretty overwhelming at first, and I still don't really have the hang of that. The Route 53, which I played with last night, was not bad. It was pretty much like any other DNS tool, you know, create records, select your record type, insert your IP addresses. SQS is also not bad. You can set it, you can create a queue, and there's like 7 or 8 options you can set on the queue in terms of like the timeouts and visibility and stuff like that, but overall not too bad. The main thing that confuses me as far as moving all my stuff to AWS is the VPCs, which are basically these private networks you can create, and then like subnets, and that kind of thing, and then linking all that up with RDS and making sure everything is right. Like, I would love to have everything in one place just because it's convenient to log into one thing and have domains, DNS, queues, S3, servers. But yeah, I've got to learn more about how to properly set up a real AWS setup, because the way Forge does AWS is it basically treats AWS like DigitalOcean. And I think to reap the full benefits of AWS, you need to sort of play AWS's way and by their rules and sort of set it up in a unique way. Like, Forge installs MySQL on your EC2 server. But, I mean, really, if you're on AWS, you're probably going to be using, like, Aurora or their RDS or whatever. You're not going to be using MySQL on your EC2 box. So there's got to be more learning on my part to figure out how to properly set that up.
Yeah, I'm planning on, I just decided it's finally time for me to learn and go whole hog on our software as a service. So I'm going to be kind of figuring it out as I go. I'll share things, but I know that Chris Fadow is going to be one of my big resources on that. So I'm guessing I'll be pulling him in and he'll be sharing some stuff too. But right now what I did was I did the Forge style thing. I basically have got a EC2 box managed by Forge that is basically just trying to reproduce what I had in Linode. But there's now, hopefully, we can replace our IronIO queues with, you know, Amazon queues and maybe even our email. I don't know. But basically, piece by piece, moving that whole thing into the Amazon ecosystem just to see. And the good thing about doing this way is only my EC2 instance is there and it's managed by Forge and everything else is still where it is. So I can hopefully learn each of them like one at a time. Like, I'll just learn the SQS well enough to move it over. Then I'll just learn other things well enough to move it over. So one note, if anybody's switching over just using the Forge managed thing, I got bit this weekend when I switched over. I switched to like the 2 gig instance on Forge, which I think is a T2.small or something. And all of a sudden my site stopped working. Basically, I got all these errors. And it turns out the T2 instances have a reserved amount of CPU cycles you're allowed to use per day. And my site, which is a pretty normal site, burned through all of them within the first 9 hours. So if you're going to switch over and do if you use AWS like you're using Linode or DigitalOcean, there's a little bit of constraint. That's the only constraint I've run into so far, but keep your eyes open for that one. Again, hopefully I and or Chris will be able to share a little bit about what it looked like to mitigate that. But for me, the fix was really wonderful in a way that I don't think you could get out of DigitalOcean or Linode very well. I basically stopped the instance because it was down anyway, and I hit change instance size, and I changed it up to a T2 large, and then I hit start again, and it was back up and running in 20 seconds. That blew my mind. The ability, and I don't have all the crazy scalability stuff or anything like that going, but the fact that I could just kind of be like, oh, just make it bigger, you know, on the simplest, you know, I hadn't done any fancy load balancing, and that was just it. That made me really excited about the potential of getting these kind of like systems that are built for maybe more needs than I have here. But just like, if I'm willing to commit to learn a little bit, the benefits that I could reap could be really, really big. So
now, will you be spending more on this?
Yes, we will definitely spend more. So out of the box, we're already, just to get the same box up and running, it's probably three times the cost. Ooh. It was on Linode. But I mean, we're running a software as a service that makes us a pretty decent amount of money, and we were spending $20 a month for hosting. So like, before I moved over to Forge, I was paying $150 or $200 a month for managed hosting. So switching to Forge, I was like, so $10 a month for Forge and $20 a month for Linode, and that's it. So right. Like, to me, doubling my $20 a month Linode cost to $40 a month on AWS does not really worry me at all. But it definitively will be significantly more expensive when I up the server size, when I add, you know, RDS, all this kind of stuff. I'm definitely going to be spending in the $100 to $200 range. But again, when I was on a full managed server, that's how much I was paying anyway. So it doesn't really bother me. So, but if you're looking to be cheap, stay on DigitalOcean, stay on Linode. And to be honest, it sucks for Linode, but like, coming out of this, I would not come out of this whole Linode DDoS situation and say, don't use Linode. First of all, I think they're great. But second of all, after they're done with this, they'll probably be more hardened than DigitalOcean, to be honest, because DigitalOcean hasn't had one
it's
of these
funny.
5 days of death.
It's funny, I was thinking the exact
thing, so.
Same thing. Like, once they're through this, they're going to be hardened.
Yeah, so honestly, and they probably lost a lot of customers, a lot of money. So, y'all, once they get through this, go sign up for some Linode servers. Give them a little love.
Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, I've been running Forge on Linode for the past year and a half, and I've never really had any kind of like sizable outage of more than a few minutes at the most. So, really, it's been pretty good up until this, like, you know, hellhole of a DDoS they had over Christmas and New Year's.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things you can feel bad about leaving them, but it's like you have no choice.
Yeah,
you can't just have Forge and Envoy are down for multiple days at a time.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. All right, so two more things on our plate. One of them is that Vim. So Jeffrey and I have both kind of been jumping back into Vim recently, and Jeffrey's much more of a Vim pro. I actually learned a decent amount. So my brother had a server back when I was in middle school, and he let me host my websites there, but he would not give me, I forget, he basically wouldn't give me FTP access or something because he wanted to force me to learn Vim in the command line. So I learned enough Vim to
jerk.
Like write out, I know,
that's
but
mean.
I'm thankful for it though. I'm thankful for it. So I learned enough Vim to just kind of get around, and two or three times since then, I've tried to like go all in on Vim, and I copied somebody else's Vim RC file, which is a configuration where you figure out all your plugins and settings. It's just overwhelming. So this time I started from scratch, got some influence from Jeffrey and some good tutorials online, and I'm trying to go whole hog for all of January on Vim. And Jeffrey, it looks like you're doing that too. I've seen your latest Lyricast. They've been all Vim. Are you going all in, or what's your situation with that?
Yeah, I switched over completely about a month ago. I used Vim years ago for a long time. And then Sublime came out, and that was sort of the new and shiny thing. So I switched to that for no real reason other than just it was new and shiny. I'm really bad about that. I get excited about new stuff, and then I switch over. But no, once I started realizing Sublime, I don't know if it's dead or not, but the creator is completely MIA. That might just mean he pops up one day with Sublime 4, but Sublime Text 3 isn't even out. That's still in like alpha or beta. So I don't know. Once you find out that the creator has possibly abandoned it, I don't know. I lose a lot of interest in it.
It tarnishes it.
It really does.
Even if it works fine, like just knowing that in the back of your mind, it bugs you.
It really does. And we've talked about this, like, Taylor, if you just suddenly decided you were done with Laravel, it would never happen. But if you did, yeah, it would kind of, I don't know, I wouldn't be so into Laravel anymore. Even if, like, the community would still continue it, and it's not like anything's going to break at that point, it's still just knowing, like, oh, this is at the top, you know, it's never going to get better than this. So I switched back to Vim. It feels really good. When people switch, there's lots of tools now. There's one called, like, Vim Awesome or Maximum Awesome. Anyways, they're basically all in one. So you install this and it just sets up everything for you. I originally thought that was pretty cool, but then I started realizing like if you're going to do Vim, you need to customize it exactly to what you want. And so if you just take somebody else's settings, one, you're not going to memorize any of them. And two, like, you're just not going to know what's there. But if you instead kind of start from scratch, which is really weird, because if you load Vim for the first time, it's like a white box with no highlighting, with no indentation. It's just like the worst thing imaginable. But if you just do it incrementally where you're like, okay, I want this highlighting. I want indents to be this number of spaces. I want this to work. It takes a long time. It takes about a week of configuration. But when you're done, it's actually really, really nice. So I'm happy I switched back. It feels good.
Well, I'm not at Jeffrey's level because he's been to the point in the past where he's fully productive there, whereas I've never been fully productive there. But you know, I did this with PHP Storm a couple years ago. I said I'm going to go all hog in something I don't know for a month, and at the end of the month, I loved it. I did this when I came back to Sublime Text from PHP Storm. I said I'm going to every time I'm frustrated with something in Sublime Text and say I wish I had that the thing I used to have in PHP Storm. I'll figure out how to do it. I'm going to try and do that this month in Vim. And I got this advice from Jeffrey. He said, it's hard to get in, but he said, when you're irritated by something, stop and fix it rather than just being irritated with it. So I'm going to spend a month in Vim, have this be the time where I just decide for sure, can I make it happen? And every time I'm irritated by something, I will say, wait, how do I, you know, like my latest one right now is how do I import a namespace in PHP? Whatever it is, how do I
There's
fix
a plugin
that one,
for that.
Right. There you go.
I'll send it
there
through
you go.
Yeah, nice. That's exactly what you do. Every time you hit a hurdle, like, oh, I wish I could browse files like Command P in Sublime. Just stop and figure out how to do it, and you'll see there's a Control P plugin. You just pull that in 5 seconds, and now you have that. Another one is like, it would be really cool if I could quickly browse to a method without like opening up the file and then scrolling the page. If you know you want to go to a file like print reports or something, there's a way to just type print reports and you instantly go there. It's faster than anything. So basically every piece of functionality you could want is available. You just have to pull it in. So that's what I mean. Like the first week or two is kind of slow because you keep going back to your VimRC file over and over. But once you're done, I think people would like it.
Well, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, to be able to blog that, but I don't know if it's going to be about out by the time this episode's out. I'm probably going to blog it at the end of the month to say, like, after having worked through this, here's a story of each of the pieces that I kind of like have wanted to learn. Jeffrey, I know you may end up sharing some stuff too, but basically just like a month in, what's my experience of kind of like what things do I need to do to get Vim? Just sort of like what I did with Sublime Text. I did a blog post of making Sublime Text do the things I wish it had from PHP Storm. I'm going to do basically making Vim do the things I wish it had from Sublime Text and see where it takes us. So,
well, one thing that's hard about Vim is like people get kind of militant about it. Just whatever somebody likes, there's always a group that gets really militant about it. And I think with Vim, like, just make it work for you. So, for example, I use Mac Vim. I don't even use Terminal Vim because it looks better. You know, it definitely looks better. If you type Command S, it'll save the file versus hitting colon W or creating a mapping like comma W. Just things like if you've been hitting Command S to save for the last decade, you don't need to change it. It's fast. So it's supposed to work for you. You don't have to follow some rigid set of rules. Whatever makes you faster is what you're trying to do there.
I like that. I think that Mac Vim makes it a much easier transition from Sublime Text just because there's little like mouse conveniences and Command S conveniences type things that you don't have in Terminal Vim. So
yeah, like you can scroll with your mouse. Like you can't do that in Terminal Vim. Or if you're browsing files, you know, like sometimes it's not all about efficiency. Sometimes you're just kind of thinking. So sometimes, I don't know, you're just looking around your project tree. And it's like, you don't need to be super fast. You're just kind of browsing around. It's nice to still use a cursor and click on a directory. So I don't feel bad about that stuff at all.
I'm riding Sublime all the way down, baby.
Yeah, like...
this Sublime... Me and John, whoever John is, the Sublime guy, this guy's become like the Tupac of editors. He like... comes in, he's like a legend, and then like it's even like the same rumors. He's like on an island by himself with all his money, and he like wanted to get away from everything. I don't care. I'm using Sublime until it literally won't run on my Mac anymore, my MacBook 2020 edition or whatever.
Guys, like everyone listening to this, Taylor is really annoying because he'll be like, okay, how do I get this set up? And so you'll give him the first steps, and literally like within 5 minutes, he's already abandoned it.
Yeah.
Like it happened with Adam. He installs it 2 minutes later.
Not true.
Uninstalled.
Not true. I love the things you're saying, but this is not entirely true.
No, this was true. And then I think you went back a second time and installed Adam again.
I will have you know that I have Adam still on my machine. It is properly configured. If I woke up tomorrow and Sublime does not run,
Adam is ready to run. It has my color scheme set. It has my insane font padding set. It has linting set up. Now, PHP Storm is a different story because that's even more configuration options than Vim, to be honest. And I think I just got to take time with Vim if I'm ever going to give it a shot. But here's how I feel about Vim is, like, I'm always worried because, like, I feel like I'm pulling in, I would have to pull in so many random plugins, and, like, I would be worried, like, what if this plugin stops working? What if that plugin stops working? Who maintains this? Does this conflict with that? Blah, blah, blah. Is that not really an issue?
You would think it would be. It's really not, honestly. Yeah, it's not much of an issue at all. I don't think about it. I know what you mean, though. Something a lot of people bring up is, like, why am I going to configure Vim just so I can get back to where I was with Sublime or Atom? And it's like, well, it does go beyond that. There is this concept of modes in Vim. So it's almost like you think of your editor like a language and how you interact with it. So once you can master that, I think Vim users are faster than anyone. But I would be the first one to admit the learning curve is so extreme, it may not be worth it. It's got to be a personality thing. Like, if you're kind of, I think it's kind of fun, honestly, to memorize some of this stuff. But if that's not your thing, then I would be happy to say it's just not worth it.
Yeah. I mean, I remember my college professors who all were old school and used Vim and used to work for like NASA and stuff. And they would just be throwing code everywhere on the screen, like really quickly. And I always thought that was really impressive when I was in college. And I was kind of, that's how I learned the basics of Vim, because I can use Vim to, you know, open files, save files, do basic stuff. But they were insane with it.
If you've ever seen Scotty in the Star Trek movie where they where they go back into time and he tries to talk into the mouse, and then they're like, oh, that's not how you use it. And then they're like, oh, he's like there's a keyboard. And he starts just kind of blazing across the keyboard. And yes, I'm a geek. And everything's just flying around the screen. That's how I see like Vim users working. Like, I've paired with some like lifetime Vim people before, and I can't even follow what they're doing. It's so fast. That's the thing. And I agree. Like, Vim has a much, 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 much higher learning curve. It's not similar to like switching from Sublime Text to PHP Storm. It's like switching from Sublime Text to writing code on a whiteboard or something. It's just it's a completely different paradigm of like how you're approaching your code. So it's a big cost to do it. But if you watch lifetime Vim users, they're just mind-blowing. It's incredible how they work. But it takes a while to get there.
Okay, here's what I should do. I should learn Vim and get it right, and then I should document the whole process and sell it as a book on LeanPub.
No, you need to brand it under Laravel, like a Laravel installer.
Yeah, Laravel, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, hold on. I just want to submit this for approval. November 27th, Taylor says, uh-oh. How do you jump to a method in Atom? And then we respond, and then 2 minutes later, Taylor says, already uninstalled Atom, slow. So, maybe you reinstalled it, friend, but you've been
what date was
lying
that
on the podcast? November 27th.
Yeah,
I think what happened is you uninstalled it and then you reinstalled it.
I just confirmed it is still on my machine and it is configured.
Because you installed it again.
Yeah, I did install it again.
So if we could keep from lying
on the
podcast.
Jeffrey's hardcore.
Oh, snap. Oh, snap. He was, that whole time we were talking, he was searching through chat archives.
He was like that scene. What is that? Is it Super Troopers or whatever? It's like, enhance. He's like digging through his computer, like digging into the history.
Oh, no, what is that? The movie with Will Smith. It's like the worst. You know those movies that just have the worst computer scenes?
Yeah.
There's one in Enemy of the State with Will Smith where they're looking at like a camera footage from some clothing store. And then all of a sudden they're like, rotate 50 degrees, zoom in, enhance. And then they're able to like read a sheet of paper that was completely out of the out of focus from the lens. It's completely ridiculous.
I feel like one of my goals in life is to maybe be half as cool as Will Smith, though, like eventually. He's like the coolest guy.
He is pretty cool. Not in Independence Day 2, though, which I'm upset about.
Yeah, that is kind
of
a
bummer. And he complained
about
it. And this is not a, I guess it is a spoiler, but it's really not because it's all over the web. I guess they kill off his character for the new sequel because he's not in it. And he was interviewed, and he's like, oh, man, I'm really upset to hear about that. But he didn't agree to be in the movie. So I think the director was like, well, screw you. You're dead.
Yeah. I heard he has the biggest ego of anybody in all of Hollywood. He's a total diva. It was really disappointing because I think it was really cool.
I don't want to be like him
anymore.
But
then, like, yeah, I know. I was so disappointed. It's like kind of here. So when people told me he wasn't Independence Day 2, I was like, good. You jerk.
No, so. His son is kind of worse. I'm still not convinced his son, Jaden. If you guys have read some of his tweets, they're the weirdest thing you've ever seen.
Yep.
I'm not convinced that he's not trolling everyone, in which case he's like the coolest kid ever.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff he writes about is the weirdest stuff you've ever seen, where he acts like he's just one with the universe.
It's got to be hard.
You have to go read it.
It's got to be hard to grow up in that kind of environment where your dad is like, pop movie icon. And
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, not only that, but apparently like his dad says, well, I'm the most talented actor. Stuff like I'm the most talented actor and we're the most talented family on the planet. And they really believe it kind of stuff. Like, so being raised thinking that and having at least some evidences to show that like, it's not entirely untrue, you know, whatever. It's kind of crazy. So
is Will Smith a good rapper? Like, I don't necessarily listen to rap.
Dude,
I like
Will
his
Smith
music,
is like a legend.
Is he? I didn't know. Like, I know obviously he did some of the early stuff with like parents just don't understand. But is he?
Yeah.
Is
let's
he
go
a
there.
Respected rapper in that community?
I think he's a really respected pop rapper. But you have to understand when you're deep into rap, there are sort of people look at rappers two different ways. Like, people don't even look at like Drake the same way they look at like Nas or Jay-Z, because like there's people that are lyricists, like hardcore respected for their lyrics, and there's people that are respected for making good popular music in the rap genre. And I think Will Smith is respected for being a good music maker and good like fun rap artist, but I don't see people talk about like, is Will Smith on the same level as like Notorious B.I.G. or Tupac. We need Dave Hicking to jump into this.
I know, to teach us something. He's just shaking his head at us right now. But I agree. I think the same thing. Like a legit like hardcore rapper or rap fan would not look at Will Smith and be like, oh man, I wish I could rap like him one day. He's not in my top 10 lyricists. But nobody would look at him and be like, oh, he just got there, you know, because he was famous. Like, he does make good, enjoyable party music that is rap. Like, that's fun, exciting pop stuff. And you know, you might not like that genre, but you're not going to say he's doing a bad job at it.
Done.
Done.
Doc Beat. Shout out Doc Beast.
Yeah. Then we'll have Doc on and he'll teach us everything about... So Dave Hicking runs he works with me at Titan, and he's just a hip-hop head, and he runs a podcast. And I love it, and I keep wanting to listen to it. And even before he worked with me, I've tried to listen to it because I want to learn more. But they know so much that, like, it's sort of like listening to a football, like a football geek podcast if you don't listen to football. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, you know, Johnny back in 70 when he did the triple bypass turn thing. And they're referencing stuff that makes no sense because they have this. It's the same thing. They're like, oh, yeah, well, Nas is this. And they'll like use, like, the one-word reference to an album from 40 years ago that makes all this meaning, and I'm like, I don't know a single word you just said in that
sense.
Dude,
I listen
like,
to their podcast,
album. That's the only one I got.
They go like way back, even into like record label politics, like you know, all that stuff, analyzing entire situations and eras and stuff.
I can't do it. I love it as an idea, but every time I try to listen to it, I make it about 2 minutes in, and I'm like, I'm too stupid to follow along with this. I can't do it. All right. Well, it's good to talk to you guys as always, and this is it for this episode of the Laravel Podcast. We'll see you all later.